First of all, I'd like to thank publicly Noach Fried for everything that he's done over the past few years for Torah Anytime in Chicago, now that he's getting married, Mirtz Hashem, within the next couple weeks. So we are looking for funds to get a camera specifically for this shiur and for the other shiurim that I have. So if anyone wants to donate toward that fund, they should email me at rabbizimm, R-A-B-B-I-Z-I-M-M, at gmail.com. But a thank you publicly to Noach for everything, and we will see you at your wedding. That's number one. Number two, Parshas Bo. Perek Yud, Pasuk Ches. Vayushev is Moshe v'Aharon el Paro. Barad has just happened. Moshe and Aharon go to Paro, and they say, you hated the hail. You promised us that you'd let us go. As long as we daven, and we got rid of the hail, so now let us go. And Paro said, absolutely not, I'm done. So the astrologers, the Khartoumim, everybody came up to Paro and they said, don't you realize we're done? This is over. This has not worked out well for us. We've had seven makos. They've been horrible. Barad was the worst of the worst. It's koma gefosai. What are we doing here? So therefore, in Pasuk Ches, Vayushav es Moshe v'Aharon el Paro, Moshe and Aaron were returned to Paro. Vayomar Elohim, and he said to them, Lechu idu es Hashem Elokeichem, go serve Hashem your God, mi v'mi aholachim. Said Paro, who's going to go? Who's going to this chag of yours? So in Pasuk Tes, Vayomar Moshe said, Bino reinu v'zkenu nileich, we're going with our youth, we're going with our elders. Bivanenu v'noseinu, we've got our sons, we've got our daughters. Bitzonenu v'kareinu nileich, we're going with our sheep, we're going with our cattle. Ki chag Hashem lanu, it's a chag for our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's when Paro turned to him and said, you're crazy. You're not taking your kids, you're not taking your sheep, you're not going all over, you're not obviously leaving everything out. That means to me that you're all escaping Mitzrayim. You're not doing that. And obviously we know what happened. Makas Arba happens, then Choshech, then of course Makas Bechoros. There's a few problems with the Pasuk, meaning Pasuk Ches. First, the word Vayushav sounds like Moshe and Aaron didn't return on their own. They were returned. It doesn't say Vayashivu that they returned on their own. Vayushav, somebody brought them back. Why did someone bring them back? Also, the words Es Moshe, the Es Aaron are seemingly out of place. The word Es indicates something else. They returned Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron were brought back. There's no need for an S over here. What's it adding on? And these questions are asked by almost all of the Achronim. It's asked by many of the Rishonim in a certain way, shape, or form, depending on how you look at it. The question is, what happens over here? So Rashi says the word Vayushav indicates that Paro was not the one who sent for them, but rather the advisors to Paro sent for them on their own. The wording that he uses sounds like he wanted to officially free them, but he didn't want to say anything. So they went ahead, meaning the Khartoumim went ahead and brought them back, the advisors to Paro, they brought them back, and that's Vayushav. They were returned, not that he returned them to himself. And that's Vayushav. Targionos says Paro had them returned. It was Paro that said something and said, bring them back. Even though we don't see that in the Pasuk directly, Vayushav is Paro told them, I think this is an idea. He used the word upakid li'itosva. He commanded that they be returned. And therefore, it really was Paro who was involved over here. The Gur Aryeh understands Rashi like Targum Yonasan. But his Girsa and Rashi is different. He says, Sheshalach achreim. He sent after them to bring them back. Our Rashi says, Sheshochu achreim. They sent after him, which sounds like the advisors. I don't know which one is the best thing over here, but it sounds like, according to the Gur Aryeh, Rashi's saying Paro sent for them like Targum Yonasan, and it sounds like from Rashi itself, what we see, Sheshochu, there were other people that were involved and not the king itself. Then Itziv says, it seems the advisors suggested it to Paro, they were the most kosher people, and then Paro nodded his head in agreement, and then they went out and did it. That's the way he goes through it as well. The Be'er Heitev says that exact example, and he says like this. The servants of Paro told in the previous pasuk, we're over, there's nothing going to be over here. Paro was silent. He didn't even nod his head. He was silent. And they took that as acquiescence, that what Paro really wanted is to bring that Moshe and Aaron, but he didn't want to admit that he was wrong. So the Khartoumim did it on their own, knowing that this is really what Paro wanted, and said, okay, Moshe, Aaron, come back. Paro wants you back. But truthfully, Paro did not say a thing. He wasn't involved, and that's why it's not mentioned over here. As far as Yonason says, Paro may not have even realized that they were brought back. He may have thought that they did it on their own, and that's why he became so insolent after they came back. He looks at Moshe Aaron and says, oh, You come crawling back to me. I see you need me more than I need you. He may not have even known in the first place that they were being brought back. Vayushav happens to be in singular form. He was returned. So it sounds like it would only be referring to one of them. The Ibn Ezra says that happens sometimes because Moshe was the more important one. You can say that. But there's an Arugas Abosim who puts everything together. We're going to end with this for this idea. Moshe and Aaron mamish left and went their separate ways. Moshe went one place, Aaron went the other place. Paro heard that they had left, and he didn't say anything, but the advisors understood, let's get them back. So the advisors went to go find Moshe, Vayushav es Moshe. They returned Moshe because that's all they could find. And then they went, other people went to go find Aaron. And separately, they returned Aaron. So it's not Vayushav Moshe Va'aron, which would indicate that they came back together. It's Vayushav es Moshe, the es Aaron, to say they came back separately, but then were brought before Paro through the non-committal agreement that Paro had given them. Yeah, Elio.
Why does Paro say Miva Miholchim? Right.
So that part, hold on with. We're going to get to Miva Miholchim. As of right now, right, he was brought in front of Paro, and Paro wanted to ask him, try to goad him into something. But we'll get to that. We are going to get to that. Actually, right now. The Baal HaTurim says that Paro was hinting to him that they're not going to make it that far. If anybody remembers our shir from last year, we talked about the kochav known as Madim, or the mazel that was red, Mars. And we talked about the Ra'ah, which is really the Egyptian god of Ra, that he had seen for the Jews, and told them that they were going to die. We combined some of those ideas together. We talked about the deities that Egypt, as well as Paro at that time, believed in. And we talked about all those ideas. The Baal HaTurim says, from his astrology, as we said before, he knew only Kalev and Yoshua would make it into Eretz Yisrael. And he was right. 600,000 Jews would leave Mitzrayim, men between the ages of 20 and 60. Out of those 600,000 Jews, two made it in. Kalev and Yoshua, and that's it. So he turned to Moshe, and this is how the Baal HaTurim says it. He turned to Moshe and he says, Mi v'mi aholachim. Who and who are going to go? The gematria of Mi v'mi aholachim is 216. 216 is the same gematria as Kalev uben Nun. He turned to Moshe and hinted within his words, who's going? You know who's going to make it? Only Kalev and Yoshua. No one else. You, Moshe, are going to die in the Midbar. You're not going to make it. I can see it in the stars. You aren't going to make it. And he told them that. What was Moshe Rabbeinu's response? Moshe's response is, you might be right. Bino reinu uvis keinenu nelech. Those under the age of 20... and those over the age of 60 are also going to make it. The Na'arenu, our young ones, Ubiskenenu, the Zakenim over the age of 60, they're going to go. Even if those between 20 and 60 and myself won't make it, the Na'arim and the Zakenim are going to go. Bivanenu, Bivnosenu, our sons, says the Baal HaTurim, seemingly are going to make it in some way, shape, or form. And that's what Bava Basra says in Kuf Chaf Aleph, that they were able to make it. Bino'arenu, Ubiskenenu, Nelech, those are the people who are going to enter the land. That's an unreal shot from the Baal HaTurim. An absolute unbelievable idea. Taima Dekra, Rav Chaim Kanievsky adds to this. He says, well, the rest of the pasuk, Bivanenu, Vivnosenu, Bitsonenu, Vivkarenu, what about all that? Says Rav Chaim, the Bivanenu, Binosenu refers to certain other people. Binenu, our sons, meaning Shevet Levi, still makes it. Although the people of Bnei Yisrael from 20 to 60 died, Bnei Levi made it. So Bivanenu refers to Shevet Levi. Binosenu, our daughters. Who's our daughters? Who are the girls that are going to make it? Every girl makes it. According to Amloes, no woman died in the Midbar except for Miriam. Miriam passed away, but the women all made it to Eretz Yisrael. The women all were able to make it. So Bivanenu, Shevet Levi. Bivnosenu, our daughters, all of the women will make it. And then he says, Bivkarenu, Bitsonenu, Vivkarenu, our animals. The animals didn't die in the Midbar either. Obviously, there were some that died of age and whatever it is. It's not like the cows miraculously lived an extra 40 years. But out of the cattle and the sheep, he said the animals were not part of the Gzera. Women weren't part of it. Shevet Levi wasn't part of it. Those under 20, those over 60, and this, all of them weren't part of it. That's how Talmid HaKra says. After I found it in Reb Chaim in the Talmid HaKra, I found it in the Shach. so that predates Rav Chaim by about 350 years. The Shach says exactly that, the Shach HaLatura from the Arizal's Talmidim. And later I saw the Chidah in an old manuscript of the Balaturim says something very, very similar. That the old Balaturims had an addition to it that are not in the new Balaturims. That Taras Adar talks about it, but at least there's something there. He says, although Moshe Rabbeinu was clearly prophesying here, says the Chidah, he didn't know what he was saying. Paro said, "Mi v'mi aholachim." He didn't realize what he was saying. What he was saying in hint in Malach world is, Kalev and Yehoshua are going to make it. And Moshe Rabbeinu answered him with the right words. Kalev and Yehoshua plus all these people. But none of them, Paro, Moshe, Aaron, had no idea that there was another conversation going on here. They had no idea what they were really prophesying about of what was happening over there. Now, another problem. It says the word Nelech, but listen to the wording of the Pasuk. Okay, going back to Pasuk Tes, it says, Binarenu v'zkenenu Nelech, our young and our old will go. Bivanenu v'vosenu v'tzonenu v'korenu Nelech. Nelech is used twice, but it seems weird. Just say it all together with one Nelech. Why do you have two of them all together? And Maral Diskin says an unreal answer. He says, the Na'arim and the Zakenim, the young men and the older men, could walk on their own. But the Bivanenu Bivnosenu, the young children, would not be able to walk on their own. They would have to walk by riding on the sheep and the cows. So because of that, it's Binarenu Bizkenu Nelech, our young and our old will walk on their own. And then Bitsonenu Uvivkarenu will carry the Bivanenu Bivnosenu. And that's why it says Nelech, number one, the walkers. Nelech, number two, the riders. Yeah, this is so good. The Maral Diskin says this. The Ayelas HaShachar, Rav Aaron Leib Steinman wonders. Anybody here do Bav Metzia, the first parak? Bav Metzia, first parak. Is Rochev Kimahalech Dami or not? Is riding considered like walking or not? From this Pasuk, says Rav Aaron Leib, you can prove that Rochev is Kimahalech. Because it says the word Nelech for the children that are riding on the animals. So riders are equal to people that are walking. So you can prove Rochev Kimahalech Dami. Rav Aaron Leib suggests that. But I just he says it and it makes no sense to me. As soon as I read the Maral Diskin, I'm sure you all had this question. I don't know too many people that ride sheep, even kids. Maybe you'll ride a cow. How many people do you know that have ever said, I've ridden a sheep before? How many kids are like that? I just don't know. So to say that the Bitsonenu Vivkarenu was there for the children to ride upon seems very strange to me. I don't know too many people who've ridden bulls before. Maybe, you know, like at maybe like one of those places, right, where you like get on, you're a cowboy. I don't know anybody who does that. But apparently that's how the Maral Diskin says that they went down over there. Now we're getting to the crux of the Pasuk, though. What is the Chag that they were going to celebrate? He said there's a Chag LaHashem Lanu. There's going to be a Chag for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. What is that Chag? The Baal HaTorim says, based on the other three times that the word Chag HaShem is used, that it's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, I don't know what we're going to do over here. It could be that the women are going to be dancing in their corner, the men are going to be bringing korbanos in their corner, and the children are going to be learning in another corner. I have no idea. It could be all the animals are going to be used for korbanos. It could be we all need to be there together. We have no idea. We know from the Torah itself that by Har Sinai, the people and all of the children were there by Har Sinai. How? How did that happen? How did the kids not cry? Did anybody stay home? It seems like all of Klal Yisrael was brought to the mountain and they were all put by the foot of the mountain, by the foothills of the mountain, so that they could all see it together. So it was all the men, all the women, all the children, even the animals, that they all went together. It seems that that's what it refers to. The Baal HaTorim says, we don't know what Hashem wants. It's a Chag HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lanu, but we have no idea what it's actually going to be, and he wasn't for all this. Says the Ramban, that's what got Paro upset. Paro says, I don't get it. He's had Chagim before. We have holidays, but we don't have a holiday like this. If you're going to bring korbanos, that's a men's holiday. Got to watch out, you're going to be on the video. But that's a men's holiday. You want to go ahead and you're going to have all these children with you? What in the world are you going to do with them when everybody's bringing korbanos? What are you going to do? You're going to have the kids sitting there when you have huge shechita knives? You're going to be chopping up the animals and throwing them on fires? What are the kids going to do? Has anybody been by a public Pesach, you know, chametz burning? Yeah. Is anyone else scared for the kids in those places? Scariest thing I've ever seen before in my life. I mean, in Eretz Yisrael, I've never been scared in Lag BaOmer, even though there are thousands of kids that are literally jumping in fires that are hundreds of feet tall. Because, I don't know, it's Eretz Yisrael. It'll all work out, I guess. That's what it's going to be. But it's scary. It's scary. Now I guess, now that I'm a father, maybe it's a little bit different, right? But you get your kids, you're like, stand 70 feet back from the really big garbage can kids. That's what you want to do when it comes to something like this. But here, says the Ramban, it makes no sense. What are you going to do with these kids? So he got angry at Moshe because he said, you must be lying. There's no way you're telling the truth. If it's a chag la Hashem that you're bringing korbanos and you need the animals, then you don't need the kids. If it's for the kids, then you don't need the animals. It can't be that. What's up? I don't know. That's a good question. Were animals considered gods even if they didn't own them? I don't know, but I think that they considered deities the fact that they existed out there, and if somebody else did something with them, I don't know. I know that we say about the sheep and the goats that when they were collecting them for the Korban Pesach, that the Egyptians miraculously didn't do anything even though they were taking their gods. That's clear, and the Medrash says that. I don't know if that was true by all of them, and maybe they chose to ignore that point. Maybe they chose to ignore it, but I don't know. It's a good question, but I don't think that's what would have gotten Paro upset. Paro himself probably wouldn't have gotten upset. He didn't treat the animals as gods. It would be the people, maybe. Maybe the people would be upset. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh said this from the beginning. He says, Miva Mia Olachim, says Paro, he looked at Moshe in the first place and he said, what's going on here? Who's really going? Is it you and the men? Or is it you, the men, women, and children? What kind of a chag are you having and what's going on over here? He couldn't understand it. The Chassam Sofer says in Drashos Chilek Beis, page 227, and in his Chidushim to Pesachim, Ayin Aleph Amad Aleph, that the stira that they were going through is he's saying, look, you want to go to the desert. That's what you're asking for, right? You ask to go to the desert. Why would you go to the desert? Why would you go to the desert in order to bring this korbanos? You want hisbodidus. You want to be on your own. You want to have concentration. You want to think hard. You want to see God and everything. You're going to be changing diapers, changing soiled diapers and running after your kids. You won't be able to concentrate. How in the world are you going to be able to concentrate there? You're bringing babysitters with you? Is that what you're going to do? He looked at him and he said, this is ridiculous, Moshe. There's stira after stira after stira. You can't do it in the city. You can't even tell me. Again, don't worry about Mitzrayim because there's a Avodah Zarah there, but you can't do it in Goshen. Why? Because you want to have your Hisbodidus by going to the Midbar. But if you're going to the Midbar to have your Hisbodidus, why are you bringing your kids? Why are you bringing the wives? If you bring the kids, if you don't bring the kids, then the wives have to stay at home. Something is totally wrong here, Paro told Moshe, and I don't get what you're doing at all, and he gets that. And then he goes even further. Says the Chassam Sofer, he looked at Moshe and he said, what are you celebrating? What chag is this? What are you celebrating? You've never celebrated a chag before. You've never had a holiday like this. Usually when you have a chag, it's because something happened. What happened that makes you celebrate for 3 days in the Midbar? Just think about that. What was it? What was Moshe's answer to that? I don't know. God told me we have to do it. But for what? I don't know. And that's really the answer. The answer that Moshe kept telling him when Moshe Ben Paro kept saying, according to the Ramban and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh and the Chassam Sofer, what are you doing? What are you doing? Moshe Rabbeinu's response is, I don't care. I don't care. Hashem told me to go for 3 days in the Midbar. I have no answers for you. And I'm happy. I'm good. I'm perfectly fine with whatever it's going to be. But I want you to think of this from Paro's point of view. He's looking at Moshe and saying, you don't make any sense. Just explain to me what you're doing, why you're doing this. And Moshe Rabbeinu's response is, I don't have a response. I have no idea why we're doing this. I'm just doing it because of Kadosh Baruch Hu said over here. That's that. Rav Hirsch, in his response of Moshe Rabbeinu, says such a beautiful thing. The response that all of your leaders, every rabbi you've ever talked to, has always told you the same thing over and over and over again. There are no intermediaries in our religion. Paro's looking at them and said, why do you have to go? Send somebody else and they'll be motzi you. And although we have Kohanim that bring korbanos, and that's true, I am a Yisrael, I'm a Bechor, so I lost it, but I'm a Yisrael, I'm not going to bring korbanos unless miraculously it's brought back to the Bechoros, loss of Lavo. The Kohanim are going to be in my stead, and I'm going to have a Kohen bring my korban. But still, I have to be there. I'm the one that's doing tshuva when my korban chatos is being brought. I'm the one who has to concentrate when the korban ola is there. The baal of the korban has to be around. He has to be there with the animal being brought. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro, Paro, I get you. You don't get it because you have priests that are yotz, that are motzi you. The priest does his thing. His celibacy counts for all of you. Said even though you're sinning, your sin is mitigated by the priest's celibacy. And I get that. The priest is the one that brings the korban, so you guys don't have to be there. He's doing it. You do your own thing. And I get that. That's how you feel because that's how your religion goes. The Jewish religion is totally different. We have to do everything. You know, there's a cop that I met here It wasn't bad, don't worry, I wasn't arrested. It was a cop that met me here. They wanted to do a training for the Lincolnwood Police, and they wanted to do a whole thing in the shul, like a active hostage type of situation. So he was doing trainings and stuff like that. So the policeman met me here, and he said, okay, so I need to find a time where you can be here. It needs to be a 3.5-hour period, right, where nobody's going to be in shul. And I'm like, that's going to be difficult. There is no time where there's a 3.5-hour period where there's no one in shul. There's no one there. I suggested to him. He said he can't do it late at night. So I said, okay, so late at night would have worked. If it's after 11:30, before 5:40, 5:30, that would work. He's like, we're not doing it then. So I said, okay, I guess we could do, you know, because we don't have a morning sitter here, so it could be like 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. He said, I can't do that either. He said, it's got to be sometime in the afternoon. I'm like, you can't. There's nothing. Because we have guys learning here. There's Mincha Maariv, right? There's everything out there. And he just said, like, yeah, but how many people are there? And I was like, you know, 5,000. Okay. So I said, like, you know, we have a bunch, you know, a couple more people here and a couple more people there. So he's like, what do you mean? You go to synagogue every day? So I'm like, well, first of all, I'm the rabbi, so yeah, right? But yeah, we all go to synagogue every day, right? Right? We all go to shul every day, 3 times a day, aside from our night seder and our possible before morning seder. Everybody does that because that's our religion. And that's what Paro didn't get. Paro's looking at it and saying, what are you talking about? Nobody does this. Nobody does it. You have a couple priests that are Yotze Zayin that are sitting in shul and doing their thing, but nobody else. Says Rav Hirsch, no, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us, not the leaders, not the official guys in charge. He wants us, every individual, to be in shul. Men, women, children, everybody is a chiyuv. So, yeah, there's exceptions. I'm not expecting my kid to be there from Mincha Maariv. Got it. Women have a p'tur from davening with a minyan. Got it. But everybody should be around. Everybody should have something to do with this. And that's the pshat. And he says the most beautiful thing. Chag doesn't only mean holiday. Chag also means a circle. It means a circle. And he says, the pshat is, everyone should be in that circle to be equidistant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As we all know, the middle of the circle, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if it's a circle, everybody is equally distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or equally close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's that radius, and we're all there around the edge of the circle. Says reverse, that's the point of the chag. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a chag for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're all part of it. No one's accepted from that. Every bit, EXE. Accepted from that, right? Everybody is involved, and that's the pshat behind it. Tam Vadas, Rav Schoenbach says, that's the power of every Jew. Do you realize how powerful we are? Every single one of us has the ability to be the one, that guy who can bring Mashiach. And we have no idea. It's going to be amazing, La'asid level, when Mashiach does come, and he turns and he's like, Moshe, it was all because of you. Remember when you went to that chakras and you davened? You did it. You did it. And everybody else is going to be like, what? You did it. And you're going to be like, that's amazing. But can you imagine? I know it won't happen that way. But it's just like, you missed chakras that morning. That's why I delayed a day. And you're just like, oh, like that's that? Can you imagine? That's the power of every Jew. He says, he explains the idea. They think, Rom al kol goyim Hashem, al shamayim kibodo. Listen, Hashem is all the way up there. Al shamayim kibodo. He's up there and he's honorable up there. That's what the non-Jews think. We say, Mi kashem elokeinu amagbi lashaves. He lifts up those that are down. He allows us to be there. And that's the difference between us and them. That's the real difference, the idea over here. Alain Lushaber says a lot of questions over here. I'm not going to go into the entire answer, but I'm going to say the following. Paro asked why the children would go as well as the animals. And Moshe told them, they're going. He never really answered Paro's question. So our basic answer right now is, he said, I don't know what to do. Or he told him, your chag is different from ours. But Alain Lushaber answers, the Torah more somewhat answers, he ignores it completely. He says, it doesn't matter, I don't want to listen to you. But the Chassam Sofer says something really amazing, and I hope that everybody gets this. You know there's a machlokas if you should bring children to shul. There's a tosis in Chagiga based on the mitzvah of Hakel, that you bring your kids to Hakel, that the kids have to be there. So the question is, tosis brings down from here, mikan somchin, to bring little kids to shul, right? Little kids to shul. Now obviously, if they're going to stare the people that are davening, that's a real problem. You can't allow little kids to be running around and doing things if people are davening, and that's a problem. It's a problem in every shul, everywhere. Baruch Hashem, there are kids running around in shoals. But on the one hand, it kind of disturbs davening, and it's not the greatest thing in the world. There's so make on that. Not that you are supposed to, or that you should bring little kids to shoal if there's no groups and there's nowhere for them to be, etc. But the Chassam Sofer says, there is hashpah. we say about Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananiah, you know, when we go in Pirkei Avos in the second parak, he goes through the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanus was a bor sid, she'enu ma'abed tipa, he never lost a drop. Rabbi Yoshua was ashrei yoladato, happy is the one who gave birth to him. The Medrash brings down, it's in Avos to Rabbi Nassim, that Rabbi Yoshua's mother brought Rabbi Yoshua's crib when he was a little baby, and had him sit by the base medrash. A little kid, baby, he would sleep by a base medrash when the people were learning. Said it would be mashpia on him. There would be something that rubs off on him. And it worked. Rabbi Yoshua became the great gadol that he became, maybe in part because his mother brought him to the base medrash when he was a baby to be around for that. Hakel, why do kids come? Why are there kids there? Taf lama bayin, that's where the Gemara Chagiga is coming from. Why are the kids there? Litain schar lemivieyan, to give schar to those who bring them. Not just because they're bringing the kids, because the kids are affected by this. They see it. It's amazing. It's one of the reasons why I told my wife, it's an important thing for all my kids to come with me to the Siyum HaShas. I understand why I can't bring a baby, or maybe a kid who's 3 years old, who's just going to get in the way and is not going to get much over there. But even then, there's a mila, if you could think that way, that of somebody taking care of the little kids and bringing them in and seeing Klal Yisrael together. So I'll let them watch the video afterward, both the New York one and the one here in Chicago, so they could be at least be involved. This is what the Chassam Sofer says. He says, he looked at Paro and he says, you think that what do kids need to be there for? The kids need to see this. That's how they grow. That's how they're going to become great. They're going to see it. They're going to be like, I want to be like that guy. I want to do what they're doing. That's what they're going to think to themselves. So of course we're going to bring the kids. That's what we need to do over here. And he said, more so. He said, you're going to try to stop them by keeping them home. Says the Chassam Sofer, they're going anyway. Even if you stop them, they're going to walk ahead. Even if you stop the animals, they're going to come anyway. He said, we're going. Whether you want us to or not, we are going. We're going to be there. That's the concept of the Chassam Sofer over here. It says over here. I think there's a little bit of a chiluk here, but I don't know if I'm right about this. Does everybody remember what we learned in Parshas Vayeshev, what happened with Yosef and Ishes Potiphar? Why was Ishes Potiphar home? I'm sorry? The Chassam Sofer says that. Go with Pshat. Why would Rashi? Why in the world was Ishes Potiphar home? She faked being sick because there was a chag and they were all celebrating, everybody, men, women, and children. And she was home by herself and she said, what opportunity do I have that's better than this to get Yosef HaTzadik? Because everybody else was at that chag. Here's what I think, and I'm not positive because nobody says it. I'm just shocked that nobody brought this up when we're all talking about this. Paro completely understood the concept of a chag for an entire family. He understood it. Chag shel Apis. Apis, according to Rabbi Yalkut Ruveni, was a day where the Nile River would overflow. And on that day where the Nile River overflowed, which Revolfson says might be in late December, something to do with Saturnalia, that famous, you know, the idea that Christian, you know, that Christmas and New Year's Day came from, in some way, shape, or form, the river would overflow. Says the Medrash, Yalkut Ruveni, every single year on that day shel Apish, there was a little cow that flew out of the sky, started flying around. They would throw things at it. It's where they got the concept of the cow jumping over the moon from. And they would throw things at it, and everybody would have a chag, and everybody was celebrating. And then that night, the cow would go back down. It's the idea, says the Yalkut Ruveni, where they got the Egel Azav from, because they remembered Yom Shel Apish, and they knew it was a family-oriented simcha, family-oriented chag. It seems they clearly had chagim that included children. There are chagim like that. But here's what Paro looked at Moshe and said, if you're going to have a chag for children, what are you going to do? You're not bringing anything for them. You got to do something. You got to make it a carnival. You got to have a circus. You got to have something going on for them, and you're doing nothing. You're going to bring the kids and you're going to have them sit there and what, learn with you? You think they're going to be happy like this? It's almost like Paro is giving them suggestions on how to be mechanech his kids and how to do this. He told them, this is ridiculous. It's not going to work this way. Don't do it. You want to do something different. Make it conducive toward children. Don't just sit there doing korbanos. Make pony rides. That's good according to Marl Diskin because they had like sheep rides on the way there, right? But at least do something for the kids themselves. And for that, Paro had an idea that went through over here. Maybe, I don't know. Paro said, kids are never invited to these types of chagim because what do you think the Egyptians did when kids came to the korbanos types places? I would assume they did child sacrifice. I would assume they killed the kids. So maybe Paro's looking at Moshe and saying, you sick, sick man. You're bringing these kids to a korban party, and you're pretending like you're all going to party together. But I know what this is, and you're into child sacrifice, and you're going to kill all these kids, aren't you? The sick man who used to shecht, slaughter 150 babies every morning and evening to bathe in their blood, who would have Egyptians take the babies and throw them into the river, who straight out asked the midwives to kill babies on the way out, and then used babies as bricks inside the walls themselves. This sick, sick man looked at Moshe, and I guess it's Kamayim punim al punim, he looked at him and said, you're a child sacrifice guy, aren't you? And Moshe's like, no. To which Paro said, I know what you're doing. It makes no sense what you're doing. It's got to be that that's the idea behind it. It's crazy, but such an idea, I think, comes in over here. He's questioning Moshe's motivations because he's like, he's trying to catch him. You're trying to kill your kids. Isn't that what you're trying to do? And now I have something really crazy. The Malbim says something awesome. We know the Egyptians believed in many gods. Some were in charge of good things in the world, and some of the gods were in charge of evil. We spoke about it again last year with the whole concept of Ra. Ra was the god of evil or caused bad things to happen, but there were gods that were good as well. I don't want to say the names, I don't want to say, I might be off a little bit, but Ibis, etc. But this, he looked at it and said, if you're sacrificing to gods, you don't sacrifice to the good gods. By good gods, you celebrate. That's what they want. You want to celebrate by those. You sacrifice to the bad gods. Why do you sacrifice to the bad gods? You want to keep them away from you. In order to keep them away from you, you placate them by giving them a korban, by going and bringing a korban around there. So this is what they understood. Good gods were for celebrating. Evil gods were for placating and something like that. They would sacrifice, appease its lust for blood and anger, etc. And that would be that. Paro knew that they served Hashem Elohim. He finally admitted to it. And he said, I know you believe in Hashem Elohim. Until this time was Elohim. Now he believes in Hashem Elohim. Hashem, we all know, what's that name known for? What's it known? Midah of? Come on, you got this.
Judgment.
The Midah of? Opposite. Rachamim. And Elohim is the Midah of Din. If you're going for Hashem Elohim, this is what Paro was sitting there. He said, I don't get it. I don't get it. Says the Malbim. I get that you're sacrificing to Midas Elohim. And you're partying with Midas Yudke Vavke. How could you do both together? See how we've been saying it up until now, the way the Ramban and the Chassam Sofer and everybody saying the Malbim is putting into better terms to understand it, to say, Paro said, I get it. I get what you would be doing here, but I don't get how you can do all of that together. The Kli Yakar has an unbelievable parish as well that goes through where he gave him permission, but limited permission. I'm not going to go through the Kli Yakar right now. You can look it up later. It's an amazing Kli Yakar. The Malaya Omer as well, that there is olos that are only done while there's other types of korbanos. I mean, just think of it this way. Is there such a concept as a shlamim by non-Jews? By Jews, we have olos, chatos, and ashams, right? A chatos is obviously if you do something wrong, you bring a korban chatos. An asham as well, you do something wrong, you bring an asham. An ola, says the Gemara, if you do a lav that you can't get any other, you know, any other type of something for, you can't get any other kapara, you could bring an ola. Shlamim is a peace offering. And on that, Paro didn't understand. What would be the point of a peace offering? Why would you sacrifice a korban to God for peace? You're not placating him. You're not trying to appease a peaceful God. You just ask him for peace and you celebrate. You're happy. That's what it should be. I don't want to go into Greek mythology, but it really goes into this Greek mythology, this idea of how the Greek gods separated as well, where there were Greek gods that were totally evil and the Greek gods that were totally amazing, and the Greeks would separate their idols based on what those gods wanted. The bathhouses got one, the Olympics got another, and all the other, the ones where you needed rain or something would happen, etc., it was all on the other side. It was a completely different form of service. That's the idea that we're saying over here. But then there comes the obvious one. What chag was this? What chag was the three-day chag that he really wanted to celebrate? We all know, right? It was the chag of Shavuos. Rabbeinu Bachaya says it straight out. When he went to Paro originally, and he said, let us celebrate 3 days in the Midbar, he asked for the chag of Shavuos. That's what he wanted. There's an amazing Or Chaim HaKadosh. He says, we all know that you can't be there past the 49th level of Tumah. What happens if you're there and you're in the 49th level of Tumah? What's going to happen? The Kohanim Mitzrayim, they're all going to die. They're never going to be able to get out. That's what they say, right? She can't be there if you're on the 49th level of Tumah. There's one difference. What are we on right now? If the Jews in Mitzrayim, who never changed their names, never changed their language, right? Never spoke Lashon Hara, never did Arias, right? Never changed their clothing. They were on the 49th level of Tumah. What are we on right now? Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, we're on like level like 643 of Tumah. So how can you get out of it? I thought you said if you're on the 50th level of Tumah, you can't get out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu grabbed them out of Mitzrayim because if they would have been there on the 50th level, they never would have came out. But we're on level 643. I'm making up that number, by the way. It's not real. But why? What's Pshat? So Or HaChaim HaKadosh says the most amazing thing. Before you have Torah, you can't get out of the 50th level of Tumah. But with Torah, you can pull yourself out of level 2,433. That you could do. So as long as you have Torah. So what was the point of the 3 days? Says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, to go out, get the Torah on Har Sinai. I don't know if it was, would have been Har Sinai, but to get the Torah on their Chag, and come back and finish off the 400 years. So why didn't they do that in the end? Because when Paro sent them out, everything went off. Had he sent them before this, it would have been a 3-day Chag. But now that he sent them out at the end, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, it's over. The deal's gone. You sent us away for good. We're having Har Sinai. We'll do it in our own time. And that's when they walked slowly and eventually Kriyas Yam Tov and then went around and eventually got to Har Sinai 49 days later. Because then they didn't have to go back. What an unbelievable idea. So we are on that level. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, Shavuos was going to be the Chag. It's weird because this time of the year was probably around Shvat, like right around this time, Adar, when Makas Arba and Makas Choshech was happening. But nonetheless, it would have been Shavuos, and Shavuos would have happened, and everything would have been there. Rabbi Yonatan, there's so much, guys. I don't know if we're not going to be able to say everything. But I'm sorry?
What were they doing on Shavuos back then before Har Sinai?
What Shavuos would have been is accepting the Torah, wherever it would have been, accepting the Torah, and then go right back to Mitzrayim with the Torah and continue to learn while they'd be continuing to be slaves to Paro. Just for those 3 days, and that's that. Yeah, Paro was okay, and that would have been the idea, and they would still remain right over here. I don't know if there's a Be'er Yosef here that's also really beautiful. The day you bring a korban and what was going to happen over there, but I'm not. Again, it's too much, and we're not going to go through. And there's a Ramosha Teitelbaum, and there's another Arug Zabosim here. But I think I'm going to end today with a Degel Machan Ephraim, a beautiful Degel Machan Ephraim. Was this a specific day? Did he have a day in mind, or was it just a random day? After all, every Makkah that was over, he said, let me go for 3 days. Did he have a specific day in mind, or was it just whatever? Is that a real Chag? Can a Chag just be on whatever day you want it to be, and it just happens, and that's all good? So Degel Machan Ephraim says, there was no specific day. Anytime they went would have been the day of the holiday. So what does Chag mean? What's the point of the Chag? He says, until now, Paro had agreed that the Jews had a god like every other nation. They had a god. But it was just an Elohim. It was nothing more than that. It was just Elohim. That Midas Adin, they had a god that was in charge, a god that punishes, just like every other nation. That's what he understood. He never believed in Yudkei Vavkei. And even when Moshe Rabbeinu told him Yudkei Vavkei, what did Paro say? Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bakolo. Who is this Yudkei Vavkei that I should listen to his voice? Elohim I get. Yudkei Vavkei, I don't get. He said those words and he didn't understand. Moshe explained that although our God allows the world to run naturally, and that's Elohim. Everybody knows the gematria of Elohim. Elohim is 86, the same gematria of HaTeva. God allows the world to run naturally. That if you wouldn't know, it seems like the world's running on its course and it's doing its own thing and it's running around and there's Mother Nature involved and everything's happening. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows the world to run this way. But there's another aspect that allows for him at any point to switch things around and use Yudkei Vavkei to make the world a little bit different. Paro couldn't believe it, says Degel Machan Ephraim. This is the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. He looked at it and he's like, no way. There's no way. The world runs on a natural course. According to this idea, Paro looked at him and said, look, I believe in magic just like you do. There's no real magic. Everything's sleight of hand. We do trickery, we do things, you know, whatever it is, and we do stuff like that. But everything's according to the natural world. Said Paro, the sun's going to come up every day, the sun's going to set every day. The moon's going to come up after that, the stars are going to appear in the sky. The constellations are always the same. I can tell you everything that happens in the world because I know how the natural world works. So Paro looked at Moshe Rabbeinu and said, just stop being this way. Just stop doing this because I know there's no extra thing that any God can do. God's work within the natural world, and that's that. And every single one of the Makos, what did they do? They proved to Paro little by little that God rules over the rivers, God rules over the land, God rules over the animals. God rules over the skies. God rules over even your bodies. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of everything. And things can happen just like that. An unnatural storm, like we talked about last week. An unnatural locust swarm. An unnatural choshech that went through the land. Or cataracts that went in their eyes, the way the Torah Tumima says it. Everything that happens is so crazy. And Paro tried to excuse it by saying, well, in theory, it could be natural. In theory, a river can turn into blood. In theory, there could be a frog thing that happens. In theory, people could be overcome by lice. In theory, there could be wild animals. He kept saying, it was Elokim, Elokim. Even the Chartumim who saw Etzba Elokim he, they saw that it's still within the natural order. It's just something that we can't do ourselves. It's a finger pointing. There's something wrong here. We just can't do it yet. They didn't see the full Yad of Hashem until Kriyas Yam Suf. They didn't realize that Yud Kei Vav Kei was involved. Yad, Yud Kei Vav Kei, until Kriyas Yam Suf itself. All of a sudden, Paro began to be maskim. And if you've ever wondered, you've seen that Va'era is 7 makos and the 3 makos that are over here are separated from each other. Obviously, it's very easy to put all 10 makos in the same parsha. And don't tell me, if Naso can be 176 psukim, Va'era could have been 176 psukim. Okay, it wasn't that big of a deal to put them all together. The reason why they're separate and the reason why they're going through is because Paro's starting to see a little bit of a, what do they call it, a chink in the armor, right? Where there's something a little bit wrong. Lechu ivdu, go and serve es Hashem Elokeichem. Go serve Hashem, who is known as your Elokim. Moshe heard those words, and he said, Hashem, I heard you say it. I heard you. That's the separation. The first 7 makos were still Elokim, 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 Elokim. After Barad, he switched to, I believe in Hashem. I get it that you have a Hashem, but I'm still so hardened of heart, I can't give in. I absolutely can't give in. Moshe heard him admit at that point, he said, that's the pshat. Guys, what happens at the end of days? What happens? V'nemar. Olenu. The end. V'nemar. Tell me, guys. The end of Olenu. V'haya Hashem l'melech ha'kolar. It's b'yomahu, on that day, Yashem Echad Ushmo Echad. His name is going to be one. They're going to put all the nations of the world. They're going to realize, not only is it Elokim, not only is there a natural world, not only does a scientist see everything and say, oh, this is how the world works. I can figure it out. There's a God particle. He's going to see that with the Elokim, there is Yudke Vavke. They won't need a $1 trillion machine to figure it out. They're going to look at the world, and this is what's going to be. Blasid Levo, Mashiach's going to come. Things are going to change, and it's Hashem Elokim. Moshe heard it from Paro. Hashem Elokeichem. Go serve Hashem Elokeichem. And that's when he said, Chag la Hashem l'machor. That's the Chag that we're going to have. The Chag is the ultimate day where everyone admits that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Elokim. Where everyone admits it together. Paro didn't get it. He said, that's ridiculous. I don't understand what you're doing. There's no way that you can have such a Chag. And he went back to thinking there's Elokim and something that Hashem has. At the end of the day, the ultimate Chag, still hasn't occurred. Because there were still people who denied it. Amalek didn't deny it. The end of the day, what we're waiting for is that final day where every person in the world gets up and says, like Paro, guys, Jews, Lechu ivdu es Hashem Elokeichem. Get up and serve Hashem your God. Not just Elokim, but Hashem with Elokim. That's what we're waiting for, guys. That's what we're waiting for. And Moshe, as I said before, it's up to your chakras. You do that chakras, that's all we're waiting for, and it's all there. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.